Let's go.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Benchtown TV. I am Paul, and with me today are Jimmy and Luke. Today, we're talking The Witcher Season 2, Episode 6, titled Dear Friend. Call to the books. We'll get to there. We're going to cover this episode by location. So we're going to start with Zintra/Zintria. And then we're going to go with Istrid and Codringer and Fenn. And then we're going to go to Cara Morhen. And then lastly, we're going to cover Temple of Militile. And again, I just have to apologize for my pronunciation of everything. I'm going to try my best, but I would not take any of my pronunciations as correct. So don't go correcting your friends and say, hey, Bingetown said this.
Yeah, I'm gonna retweet that sentiment because I was an audiobook reader for a couple of them, so I heard a lot of these terms way different. But yeah, I'm just gonna whatever Paul says, I'm gonna try and say as well because I just don't know what proper nouns are.
Agreed.
But yeah, let's just jump right in. We kind of talked about what we liked of the season and what we're looking forward to the beginning of episode 5 coverage. So if you're looking for that, go and check that out. This is going to just cover episode 6. And right now in episode 6, in Zintra, we got Frin and Fran. That's what I have in my notes. Fringilla and Francesca, or Frin and Fran. And they just showing Fran's ability to heal flowers and talks about her backstory a little bit, end up learning that she slit her father's throat after her father tried to incite the village to rebel against this woman with power. And the village ended up building a statue in her honor. That's an interesting childhood.
So her dad was an elf as well. And did they not want the elves to be using their magic? Is that why he didn't want them to be? Is that why he was against it?
I guess I this does not ring a bell to me. I don't know if it is canon, but for some reason the ability to use, I think it's magic, I don't even think it's chaos, I don't know what the elves do, to be honest, in this world. I'm just gonna call it magic. But I guess the father freaked out and tried to basically was afraid of Francesca's power and basically tried to kill her. But fuck that. He got his throat slit instead.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah. Fran doesn't mess around, man. You can tell she's a strong ass bitch.
Dude.
She's crazy.
She is the most pregnant girl I've ever seen in my life in this scene. Holy crap. I like thought there had to be a time skip, which it's probably implied. I don't know how long elves are pregnant, if they ever even say it's different. But Jesus, man. And it turns out that there probably was a time skip because she does give birth this episode.
Now, let me ask you guys this question because it may have been answered in maybe like the 3 or 4 pod. They were saying how an elf has never come to full term recently because of how, you know, their whole race is screwed up right now because they're being, you know, they're in hiding and they're being oppressed. So is it because they're like being oppressed that they just can't come the full, is there some kind of magic to it, or
can't what?
Can't come the full term.
So we did cover this a little bit in episode 2, I believe, but I don't mind going over it again. It's real quick. So I don't know if you remember in season 1 there was an episode where we get introduced to Philivandril. There is this young elf who is like kicking them and giving them shit. She ends up saying to Villavangel in that scene, you know, there is a younger generation of elves. Like the younger generation is wanting to go out and fight and reclaim our land. And as far as I understand that all these young elves fought and died. A lot of the younger generation has died. And the thing about elves is once they get to a certain age, they can't really reproduce. It's kind of like once they go through a normal human life, they're beyond their ability to have kids.
All right. So pretty much the certain generation died out and there wasn't enough of that generation to be able to reproduce. Okay.
The youngins were all too wild and went out and got themselves killed.
Wild and free, man.
Yeah. So
in this opening scene, the one main thing I really took away is that Francesca is starting to tell Fringilla, subtly at least, that she wants her to be the leader of Nilfgaard, basically, and not
Emir.
Like, why? I forget how they pronounce it. Emir?
Yeah.
Yeah, why? Like, why is she? Francesca's asking Frangilla, like, why are you even like caring about having Amir be the leader? You might, you basically are. You might as well just go ahead and be the leader, and we'll get more shit done. So I thought that was an interesting take, because it's making it less like it's every time I think about Frangilla, I think of how her state was at the end of season one, which I just hate it, like that direction. And they're completely kind of rebooting part of her personality here. And this is, you know, starting to plant the seeds that she is not just going to be a pure killing evil mage machine for Nilfgaard. And I really like that, because she's not like that in the books. And it seems like they're creeping towards what I had in my head of her. But that's pretty much what I took from that scene. And also clean shaven Kahir makes his appearance, and Jesus, man, I said this to Kyle on the first podcast, Jimmy. Does he not remind you slightly of John Murphy?
His whole... Oh, yeah, he does. In the eyes and like, yep. Yeah, like, yep, he does. He really
totally does.
We cover the 100, everybody.
He definitely has some defined features that you can only really see when he is clean shaven. We also get that line Francesca says to Frangilla, you know, it's not that you have been acting afraid since Kahir's got here, but you've kind of acted smaller since Kahir got here. So she's almost realizes that Kahir is higher up in the order and is a little bit afraid of what he might be able to do. But that being said, she kind of has to work with the elves and work with him as well. And the elves and Kahir and the one general, I forget his name, Hawk or Hockey or whatever, they're kind of button heads with Frangilla's ideas of what to do with the elves. So tensions are rising a little bit, and it seems that Frangilla is in the middle of it.
Yeah, and it looks like Fran, you know, she's trying to tell Frangilla, like you're saying, that she obviously would rather it be her than the Black Knight as the leader. And Frangilla's going the route where she's saying he outranks me, but Fran's saying, you know, there's power in what you've done for these people. You have the people on your side. Like, you could take the power if you want. And we obviously get a little bit of a foreshadow later where she's talking to her husband. I forget his name. Apologize for that.
Phil Evangel.
Yeah. And he's saying, you know, that we definitely have a problem with the Black Knight. You know, we need Frangilla here. And she's like, I'm working on it.
Are they married?
He's the baby daddy. I don't know if they're married, but
okay.
They never explicitly said it, but yeah, he's supposed to be like the father figure. Mm-hmm. Maybe they are married. It's weird. I never saw that in the books or anything. So might be made up. But we also get Kahir telling Frangilla, you know, hey, what they're doing to the elves is horrible. The persecution of the elves is despicable. I'm glad that you kind of are taking it upon yourself to give them safe haven, let them stay here and train them. But it's time to get back to what we originally were trying to do, and that's find the girl. And, you know, the original reason why they took Syntra in the first place. Last time he saw Ciri, he heard she was outside of Sodden. So that's kind of like a recurring thing. She was last seen there, and that's where people were going. That's what Rhiannon's heard. And Dara, the elf who helped her escape in season one, who is now the spy for Dijkstra, he is walking by and he kind of hears this. A little bit later on, Phil and Fran are talking about how they may never be able to get their land back. Phil being Phil Evangel, Dave Talda. He kind of coined that episode one. They were talking about how they may never get their original land back. And since that soldier arrived, everything feels more vulnerable, meaning Kahir. Ever since Kahir got back, the elves seem to be less of a priority.
Right.
And he finally comes out and says, I know I used to be the leader and now you're the leader. And that's totally fine. I just want you to tell me what to do. I'm not here to tell you what to do. He's like, dude, I'll wear Nilfgaard armor. That's what you need. I'll basically whatever's best for our people. And she says, hey, I just need you to stay by my side. The baby is the most what's important now. And Luke, to answer your question, the way she grabs his hand and kind of puts it on her belly to feel the baby, it seems like they're more than just like companions. It seems like he really is the baby daddy.
I mean, it doesn't seem like they go together. Like, to me, he seems older and, you know, it doesn't look like they fit, but I just took it like he's the baby daddy.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have anything to comment on. I just totally, that came out of left field to me because it did all, I also got those vibes and wasn't expecting them.
Later, we see the same general that I don't know how to pronounce. Hawk? Hacky?
Thought it was hockey because I was like making One Piece.
That's what I've been saying. I've been saying hockey, but it just feels wrong because he's a little bitch and hockey is way too cool of a name for him.
Agreed.
I'm going to call him Hake then. So Hake and Kahir are like just talking shit on the elves. They're watching them train, saying, oh, they can't fight. What the hell? They're looking at Phil Evangel and Dara. And it really is embarrassing how little Dara knows about fighting. And, you know, Phil is all right. But even him trying to be the teacher, they're like, oh, man, we have so far to go. So they do this whole demonstration. I don't know what this was supposed to accomplish, but Kahir fights Dara real quick. It's like a decorated Nilfgaardian general versus somebody who's just learning how to fight. Like, obviously, you should kick his ass. What does this prove? Mm-hmm. What did you guys think about that?
I mean, I literally just took it like he was just proving a point that we could take you guys down at any point. You're nothing to us.
Okay.
I was more weirded out by the fact that Phil Evangel felt like he was going to actually kill Kahir. Right?
That was badass. Yeah.
He pulls the dagger out after Kahir goes, you guys fight like fairies. He goes, what? That's not true. You killed them all.
Yeah.
That part was more interesting to me because I just did not know Phil came strapped and that he's a good fighter.
Yeah, I mean, they do say at some point our people, meaning the elves, are learned and they're good at defending. They're not good at attacking because they've been defending themselves for so long.
Which makes sense.
They're scrappy in that way, but they're not learned in being like a part of an army that's going to attack and be, you know, like how they're going to have to be a part of the Nilfgaardian army if they're going to actually stick with this alliance. But yeah, I mean, I think either way, like Phil doesn't like the Black Knight here at all. And there's that tension and he's not going to take any shit. So I was like, damn, I love it when he pulled out the dagger on him.
Yeah.
Very conveniently, Francesca, I guess, starts to go through labor and, you know, Phil gets called. He says, oh, you're lucky. I would have loved to see how that ended. What would you have Kahir said or done in that situation to get him out of it? It could have been bad.
He's a cockroach, bro. He survives.
Yeah, right. I mean, I love it. I mean, you know that Phil wouldn't have gone through with doing anything besides just threatening him because you know that he's the general. And if he actually did do anything, he would just get killed too.
Elfgaard.
Yeah.
Elfgaard,
baby.
That's funny. Fran has her baby. Phil Evangel looks like he's going to be sick in the background. I don't know if you saw that. He's just like in the background and looks like he's going to puke. And I don't know what the point of the scene was of the baby not really breathing at first. Frangela kind of holds it. And then, you know, she says, you know, no magic, just warmth is what saved it.
I mean, I took it as the point is the suspense because we were supposed to think that no babies are going to be or have been born. So you're thinking, all right, the baby comes out. It's not going to live. And, you know, the two, you know, Phil and Fran are sitting there going, oh, my God, what's going on? We as the watchers are supposed to be thinking, all right, it's not going to make it. And then, I mean, I think I took it normal. Like, I don't think she used magic. I just think they got.
If anything, the magic came from the deathless mother. Is that what we call her?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If anything, it's that.
To allow it to live.
Exactly. Because all the elves in the past have been dying. So if anything, it's confirming that the deals actually follow through. So whatever that means that Frangilla is also going to have like the alliance is going to work and it's going to build up Nilfgaard. And then if Yennefer delivers Ciri, to me, it means that she's guaranteed to get her magic back. So I think that was confirmation of that. It's cool that everyone reacted the way they did. They all fucking partied, got hammered, and they were like, let's go. We got a baby. That kid's never going to love anybody else because there's no one else's age.
Seriously, going to be the weirdest childhood. You know, the way Frangilla went out and said, hey, like a new elf has been born this night and everybody erupts. Thought that was funny. It was pretty cool.
Now, the scene where we see the Black Knight looking over the crowd, is that Hack or whatever you called him that's saying, you know, this is a little dangerous, you know, having these people know that they can reproduce themselves. They don't need us anymore.
I believe so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's a couple things that happened in that scene, but it boils down to Kahir and Frangilla catching up, right? Like they have that conversation that you're already referencing, Paul. And then we find out that Amir is going to make an appearance within the week to Syntra. Is that what you said? That was what the letter said, right? That he had?
Yeah, it said any day now.
Yeah.
And crazy.
That, bro, that to me, I am so excited for that moment because I have no idea how that introduction is going to go if it does truly happen in the next two episodes.
It was Kahir that was questioning the Owls Alliance, saying, hey, now that they can repopulate on their own, they won't need our help.
Oh, so that's Kahir to Fringilla, mm-hmm. not yeah. back to. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's like supposed to be obviously a little backhanded slap to Fringilla saying, yo, Amir hit me up, not you, me.
Yeah. Chain of command. Yeah. I get the news first and mm-hmm. then I tell you. Just the way he threw that down. And I don't know why, but I love the idea of marks and stamps, just the ring and stamping the yeah. wax.
Right.
I'm seal using that for so my cool. wedding. My it's wedding awesome. Invitations.
Means can I do it them. For you? I'll yeah. come help you out. And yeah, so we're getting Fringilla hearing the Deathless Mother again. She kind of hears it in the back of her head. And she's saying, you know, first they'll take your power and then they'll take your freedom. She's kind of questioning whether or not she's going to be able to obtain what she wants, which is, you know, be in power and help Nilfgaard just become a strong power again, even though mm-hmm. they really are. I feel like she wants to be approved by Emir and doesn't want the failure of Sodden anymore.
Yep.
And the last thing we get here is Dara. And Dara is talking to this owl that Dijkstra was talking to. As we know, Dara is the spy that Dijkstra sent in to Syntra. But now Dara is realizing that everyone's goal right now, meaning Kahir's and the Emperor of Nilfgaard's, Emir, is to find Ciri. And mm-hmm. that's the reason that they came to Syntra.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm alone in this, but I just think Dara is one of the least interesting things in this entire show. And I just, maybe it's because of how much I hated his last reaction to Ciri at the end of season one, like where we left him. But mm-hmm. like he's, and also combined with the fact that he's just a made up character from the books that I just don't really see what the purpose is yet, which I'm sure they have a plan, but I just really don't like this character. And maybe it'll work out. But as of right now, I feel like it's just wasted time anytime we're with him because he's just boring to me. And I don't care. There's so much more interesting shit going on than this little freaking elf that's going to be the secondary spy for Lydia because we already have Rience doing the dirty work. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I take him like the typical, you know, we had our falling out in season one, but you know, I still love you, Ciri, and
like
maybe
he's going to be good when
yeah,
it comes down
he's gonna
to
turn,
it. Yeah.
Turn on them as a spy, and he's going to meet back up with Ciri. And I don't know. I don't have the knowledge of the books, so I don't know if Ciri gets like a love interest or not in the books. But, you know, I would guess that maybe he would be it for if they want to give her something. You know, they kind of look the same age. They had their season one interaction, and it's the perfect chance for him to redeem himself when something happens where he has to give information as a spy or whatever it is. But yeah, he doesn't interest me either at right now. He just seems like the guy that we need to put a spy in this. What character should we write into it? All right. Well, Dara's, you know, he's not doing anything. Let's just put him in there.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have anything to say. I think you guys nailed it. I don't really know what the point of he's supposed to do, but
I like his hair too.
His hair is sweet. Kyle said he loved it. He was giving him high marks on episode
I like
four,
it too.
I believe. Yeah. And yeah, now he's got it, you know, all cleaned up and it looks pretty badass. But yeah, that's going to do it for us unless you guys have anything you want to say about that storyline.
Nah, are we jumping to Istrid next?
Yeah. So Istrid just takes place in this entire episode in one little room, and that is Codringer and Fenn's office. I liked these characters a lot. I thought they were very cool, very similar to what I was picturing in the books, even though they're a little bit different. It doesn't matter. The way that Istrid walks in and there is just books and scrolls and paper everywhere hung up. There wasn't like a piece of the wall that you could actually see. I loved it. That's exactly what I had in mind. These two people that literally their entire job is just knowledge.
Mm-hmm. So cool. And I love how they... Istrid thought the cat was the other name in the
Fenn.
Is this Fenn?
Yeah, Fenn. Yeah. This is Fenn, right?
No, you're right, Paul. This was pretty spot on to what I had in my head. It's just an information center, like more than a library that just holds information. The people that are in there are useful and know how to, you know, use that information. It just seems mm-hmm. like such a good way to give some exposition and info dump, which that's pretty much what we get here. And it's pretty big picture stuff, so it's hard, also kind of hard to explain, but if you want to start going through that, Paul.
One cool little nugget, as Kyle likes to say, is when he walks in, he sees a book. It's called Elves and Humans. And he freaks out. He's like, oh, this is supposed to be destroyed. And Cotterring is telling him, you know, this is actually, you know, the original copy. Elves and Humans is a call to the games. When you're playing Witcher 3, you run around, you collect everything, collect books, pieces of writing, and you can do a few things with them. Mostly you just sell them. But this is one that you collect a lot, and you can pull it up and read. It's like, you know, a paragraph and a half, a little bit. And it just does kind of outline the beginning. It's written by Hen Geddith Dice. sorry about that. But he is the oldest living mage prior to the Thanid coup, the Thanid coup being the Thanid Isles and all that, separating itself as their own country, I believe. If that's wrong, please correct me in the comments.
Somebody? Is that where Aretusa is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I don't know. I just thought it was nice that they threw this in there. You know, it was only one or two lines, but it is really cool to see these things in the games that you run around collecting actually used in the storyline. Yeah. So that was one thing. And then he begins talking to Cotteringer and Fen and says, okay, I need to know something. How does a Witcher, a monolith, and a mysterious girl all have to do with Nilfgaard? Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, they don't really do anything at first. Yeah, they just kind of like, he kind of coughs and nods to the desk. And then Istra drops like much gold. To continue with the How I Met Your Mother references.
Toss a coin, dude.
Yeah. And they're like, holy shit, Nilfgaardian marks. Like, do you work for Sinsha? Or do you work for Nilfgaard? And he's like, does it matter? Only that it makes you more interesting. They're just always trying to get little details.
Mm-hmm.
But they're like, all right, you got gold. Let's go.
I love that they hate Stregobor too. Because the second like his name gets brought up, yep. They're like, oh, do you work with him? Like, we're not helping you if you work with Stregobor. Fuck that guy.
Yep.
Fuck Stregobor. Kyle and I were talking so much shit on him. Episode 3 and 4, he's just a total douchebag the entire time.
Well, you were putting some respect on his name as a character. That was like an interesting character.
Yeah. The fact that he doesn't have hands and just like...
Yeah, that was a cool reveal.
He's just
chaos.
That's really cool.
They just kind of dig in and they know these are sensitive questions. So that's why, you know, costs a whole lot. Istrid kind of gives them a clue saying there's a gene in the Sinsha bloodline that, you know, I've never seen before. Looks like only the women have it. And Fen kind of puts something together. She's like, oh, get that scroll. I think I remember something. And then she goes to kind of talk about the history of what happened. And she goes on and says, when the humans proved hostile, bringing death and destruction, the elves built a weapon to destroy them. She actually says, hey, the word for weapon is very similar to this other word in Elvish. I believe it's Elder language. It was mistranslated to weapon instead of warrior.
Mm-hmm.
So they're like, oh, shit, they didn't build a weapon. There was an actual person, which Codringer then says, you know, Lara Doran, you don't really know who that is. And finally, we're almost done. Finally, they read this one little article from a scroll of Lara Doran saying, the excerpt read, and when the babe was born on a field, a fain wage sprung up, and Lara Doran drew her last breath, crying, know this, my curse will hound your sentence until the 10th generation, until my columns of time and space tremble and open up for my people. Then my vengeance will be born again. What'd you get from that, Jimmy?
So that's what I wanted to talk to you guys about, the original vision quest last episode. And I said I didn't want to bring it up until we get our episode 6 knowledge. So I took that vision quest, quote unquote, soul something or
soul search. Yeah,
they take their mushrooms, they go on their vision quest, and Ciri's seeing, you know, her parents, she's seeing her grandmother. And at times, you know, she's getting looked at and talked to by certain characters. So Triss is saying, this isn't right. And Luke, you were talking about, like, is it because the mother or somebody so strong that they're being able to break through? And my guess was just that it's actually the curse that's causing this problem in the vision quest, and it's the curse that's talking to her. So
yeah,
look at this guy.
And this is where we're starting to get into some you know, thin ice here with me and Paul, because I don't know how much they're gonna follow the books here, but like, this is sort of end game stuff. So I don't think there's anything we can really comment on besides the fact that I think you're right. It seems like the show's going that way, where this curse is, can like the genetics, this genetic curse from Laura Dorn, like, is within Siri maybe. And like, we're trying to, and we're seeing it start to show itself through these weird magical situations, I'll say.
Right. Right. So our girl, Siri, is a warrior, man.
The last line that they have is they kind of realize Calanthe hid this.
Yep.
That Calanthe hid her elven bloodline because she knew a generational weapon literally lurked in her bloodline.
So that's like almost the answer, in my opinion, to why Siri is saying, you know, why does Calanthe hate elves so much? You know, she said it's really just fake. It's just doing that so that no one would ever think that she has any elven blood in her at all, just so they could hide the curse.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now, while we're on the pod, kind of talked about before, but let's get a little reaction here. The OA.
Oh, we brought this up in the last episode,
I don't think we did it on pod for people to see. I think it was after the yet.
Oh, you might be right. But yes, yeah, man, it was just fucking with me so badly. I didn't know where I recognized Fenn from. And yep, I should have known this because we just covered this on the podcast like 3 months ago. But yeah, man, that she is one of the scientists in season two of the OA. Mm-hmm. And she's just exactly who is described in the book as Fenn, too. Like, right, you know, she basically plays the part perfectly. And it also gave me a bunch of, this is just another tangent off that. Did this not give you Codringer and Fenn, like Harry Potter vibes, like a Harry Potter store in Diagon Alley or something?
Yeah,
shit?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was just thinking that the whole time. I was like, the OA and Harry Potter. Perfect.
Yep.
So that's going to do it for Istrid and Codringer and Fenn. I hope Codringer and Fenn come back just because they're very cool.
Yeah, they are cool. I like them a lot.
I will say they won't come back this season because I know that. But
how dare you tell me that?
Paul. Sorry, spoilers.
Still have two episodes to watch, bro.
But I enjoyed them a lot, is all I was trying to get across. But we're going to jump over to Vesemir and Triss at Kaer Morhen. Vesemir is just depressed. He's like, you know, I've been a fucking fool. I was trying to turn this girl into a witcher. Maybe she could have died. Didn't even ask Geralt about it. And Triss is saying, hey, I was a fool too. Don't worry about it. Where'd they go, by the way? You know, they didn't say, but if I had to guess, I guess they're going to Nenekes, which, again, I believe is how they pronounce it in the show. I wouldn't bet money on it. they kind of say whatever is running through Ciri's veins, it's way more dangerous than we know. This is Triss just, you know, coming to the realization just after her vision quest, like you guys were saying. All of a sudden, Vesemir's medallion starts vibrating. And whenever that shit starts vibrating, you know something's going to go down.
I love that.
Yep.
Something's here. I
love how all the medallions go off too, the ones that are hanging. So
yeah. Cool. Mm-hmm.
And who is it? You don't see, but you do hear a snap.
Yeah.
And that's like, okay.
Colonel Mustang's here, baby.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, so it turns out to be Rience. What do you guys think of this exchange between Rience versus supposedly a master witcher and a master mage?
Well, my first thought is just the fact that Rience being able to use this forbidden magic just puts him in the top tier of mages, yeah, I guess, just in this version of the Witcher, because this is not how it's supposed to really be.
I agree.
But like him being able to use the fire magic, I'm actually fine because Vesemir is clearly out of his prime. Like, you know, I don't really have anything else to say. Maybe he should have been able to put up a better fight. But
it's not like he could take his potions or anything. You know, he did have a little bit of his magic to use to protect himself, and then he got whooped on a little bit. But yeah, I mean, I fully take, like I said a million times, I don't have any knowledge of Rience in the book. So for me, as a non-book reader, I fully take Rience as a very top mage just because of that conversation he had where he says, whether you guys were agreeing or not because of your knowledge, but the fact that I can use this fire chaos, you know, one of the things he said is you have to be strong enough to be able to use it or it consumes you. And we know that our girl Yen, you know, we hate the fact that it's showing that she used it. I mean, she used it to a major, major degree, not just snapping her fingers, but, you know, it stole her chaos from her. So, yeah, I took him as like a big dog and I was fine with him whooping on them a little bit. And this is the first time we get to see a scar on his face, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's the aftermath of the Yasker scene with Yennefer, with Drunken. But we also do, I think Triss puts up a little bit of a mini fight in the beginning, at least, which gives her some respect too. But I think it was more about how strong Rience is and prepared he was compared to being, rather than it being Vesemir being weak, because he ain't no bitch, but, you know, he's not in his prime.
If you want to talk more Harry Potter, it kind of reminds me of the Death Eaters and Voldemort in a way where it's like, he's doing magic that you're not supposed to do, you know, like Dumbledore's strong and the other, you know, Order of the Phoenix are strong, but they'll never go into that crazy, strong, dark magic.
Yeah.
You know, but Rience will. And that's, you know, his, you know, that's his advantage that he has over.
That's a good comparison. But that's pretty much the end of this scene, because all that happens is it's probably five minutes of real time. But you see Rience. I don't know. Do they show it in the scene? I knew right away he obviously grabbed the Elder Blood.
Yeah, I think they show him.
I wrote that
up, right?
down, and I didn't even see if he did do it, though, because it was so obvious that that's why he was there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's pretty much the end of that scene before we pick back up. Paul, did you have anything else to say about that?
No, nah, just Vesemir. He kind of sends Vesemir flying after he had Triss kind of out of the fight, surrounded her by fire, I believe it was. So you get Vesemir one-on-one. And as soon as he sends Vesemir flying, he just kind of disappears. Triss, like you said, just yells for help. He yells for Cohen or Lambert or something like that. And yeah, that's kind of it.
Now, let me ask you guys this question. Say they actually were able, and this might be end game for this season or later seasons, but say they were able to use Ciri's blood to make a new Witcher. Is this going to be like a crazy cursed strong Witcher, like using her cursed blood? Do you think it's going to be anything different because it's from her specifically? Or do you think it would just create a normal Witcher based on it being Elder blood?
If I had to guess, I would say that it would just be a normal Witcher just because of the Elder blood. You know, that being said, you know, it is Ciri, this chosen one that everybody's going after. So it could, you know, be way stronger and have a completely different effect than we're used to.
Yeah, because I mean, there is that line where Triss is like, you know, we thought we were doing one thing, but we just took the blood. And I don't remember the exact line, but she pretty much says like the blood from someone who can end the world, you know? Mm. So
yeah, I would say watch and find out. We'll see what they do, because I think we're going to get some answers.
Yeah, and we kind of see Triss and Cohen talking after Vesemir gets knocked out. This is where she realizes that he actually did take something. You know, Lambert has a throwaway line. Well, at least he, you know, left empty-handed. And she was like, well, shit, no, he didn't.
Yeah, why do I have here Lambert starts being a bitch again? Is that for that line? I forget.
Because he starts saying like, oh, it was a mage. Why don't we ask the other mage what the hell her kind is doing here? And it's like, bro, relax. Triss comes back with, you know, fire magic is off limits. Whoever this guy was, not with the Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's exactly. Okay. Yep, yes, that's what I've written down. Fuck that guy, man. Lambert is so good at pissing me off, specifically me. My God.
I know. I just hate what they decided to make him a douche. He's this really cool Witcher character, but. Mm-hmm. In the show, he's just, you know, has to have this exterior of douchiness.
Mm-hmm. He's a frat bro. He's a frat bro Witcher.
Yeah, right.
So we do get a scene with Rience and Lydia. We're going to bring this up later. We're going to kind of cover it into more detail because it does come up again this episode. But to go back to Triss and Vesemir, you know, tells Vesemir, you know, the vial's gone and that Triss is leaving. Vesemir just looks depressed. It looks like he's going to jump off a bridge. And the last scene we get of Triss is her creating a teleporter to go to Arethusa, where she sees Tisea, and Tisea is looking at this wanted poster of Yen, which I thought was cool. Mm-hmm. And Triss says to her, hey, I'm loyal to you and I'm going to straight up tell you what exactly I know. I know for a fact that a drop of blood from Ciri can change the world and in the wrong hands.
Okay.
You know,
so that was my destroy. Line. Yeah, that was the line that I was talking about. Yeah. Okay, cool.
I hate this "she will destroy it" line, because it's like, it's not.
Well,
Ciri.
we already gave Triss some shit for the way she reacted to Ciri's vision quest, and you know how she reacted specifically at Ciri instead of going to someone else first. Again, we've talked about it a million times. Ciri's a young girl, and it's that prophecy thing. Don't want to get too crazy with like weird rants, but it's the situation like in X-Men comics where Apocalypse is reborn and he's like a kid mutant. And the argument is, can you raise him to not be Apocalypse, or is he going to always become Apocalypse? Mm-hmm. You know,
nature versus nurture.
And to make it more even like relevant to what we cover and shit, like Wheel of Time. Like, I won't say the spoiler because it's so fresh now, but like, yeah, it's like the whole prophecy, is the dragon going to break the world or save
right,
the world?
Right,
and
right.
I'm only three books in, so I don't even know the ending. I'm just assuming that he saved the world, but yeah, like, you right, know, you got to right. keep that on the table for the trope and for the suspense and like the final showdown and shit. Is Ciri going to be bad? Is she going to be good? I don't know, but you know. Fuck, Trish should have yeah, a little bit right. more confidence in her girl after meeting her, because Ciri's the shit.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Now, jumping over to the final and far and away the best storyline, in my opinion, mm-hmm. is just anything to do with Geralt
yep.
and Ciri. So we see them. They just left Kaer Morhen, and that was last time. They're on Roach. Just typical Ciri and Geralt conversation, walking through the woods. Feels like you're playing a game. Geralt just asking a million, or I'm sorry, Ciri asking a million questions. Geralt not saying anything. He's still on the fact that you shouldn't have tried to become a Witcher. Like, you want to try and kill yourself so you can become a mutant, so you can kill yourself getting revenge.
Right.
Like, relax. And Ciri's like, oh, you just care about your duty. You don't care about anything I want. But before they even get to the temple, they are hunting this Chernabog. I forgot mm-hmm. about this.
Yeah, so this Geralt is a cool scene.
You mentioned this in the last podcast.
You did, yeah.
too, how cool this was. This is
the
amazing.
POV. Hell
I
yeah.
I freaking love this like whole interaction.
Mm-hmm. Geralt's just kind of going out into the shallows part of the river to pull it out. And Ciri is on Roach. And we get that cool POV, mm-hmm. you know, looking mm-hmm. down, weird colors. And it's, you see it come over the mountain right over the horizon. Said it a million times, I'll say it again. The monsters in Netflix are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we see some Ard
signs. I was going to say, Geralt's use of magic in this scene is so great. It's just purely pretty much defensive, just
yeah.
getting a feel for what's good with this monster, because it just came out of the monolith, him and Istrid watched, like, figure it out, and he's just playing defense right here. And this is before he even pops the elixirs, too, right? So it's like mm-hmm. the warm-up. Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
right, right. Exactly.
And very hard scene to watch. Ends up, Chernabog goes towards Ciri, but no. actually gets Roach. We get Roach just lying on the ground with three gashes out of its hindquarters. And, you know, Geralt just ends it real quick. Says a nice few last words. Enjoy your last walk through the meadow.
Mm-hmm.
Geralt's a big softy.
Right in the feels, dude.
Anything Wait. That happens to his horse is the only time he actually gets emotional.
yep.
I forget if this is show or book that they explain the whole Roach thing, but Jimmy, you tell me if you know. But like, how does
every horse is Roach?
Every horse is Roach. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah so I don't know if I knew that just because of looking shit up, or if I knew it from the show, to be honest. But yeah every time he gets a new horse, it's Roach. I know that.
For some reason, I think it is actually a book thing, because I have like a memory in my mind of Yasker, or technically Dandelion, because it's the books, saying right, right. like, why are you calling this white horse Roach, bro? I thought the other one was Roach. And he's like, yeah they're all Roach.
I mean, guy or girl, you know, male or female, it's Roach. Like,
that's why I wrote Roach 3.0 dies from the monster wounds, because I think it's his third, maybe.
Yeah,
could be wrong,
that's a shame, man. Roach was a good horse.
This was a Hopefully. Good one. This is the one he was talking to outside of Nivellen's place, saying like, oh, you're going to like Ciri because she talks all the time, or something like that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, yeah. She won't listen to me. Does everything the opposite of whatever I say.
I can't believe the showrunners put three gashes in a real horse too, man. Just for stupid Netflix. Can't believe
they killed this. They had Henry Cavill kill a horse on set just for this scene. But besides that horrible, sad scene, they just kind of have Geralt talking to Ciri, saying, hey, you ready for this? You know, go up to the top of the cliff. Go be bait real quick. He downs the elixir. And I like how we keep the camera on him to watch him turn mm-hmm. from normal Geralt to, you know, black eyes, pale skin.
Mm-hmm. Just the color fades, and it just looks so good.
Yeah, it does.
Long story short, Geralt's a beast. Jumps off the cliff and drags a knife through the Chernabog in midair.
And this is good for Ciri too, because it says a million things about her. You know, major trust in Geralt. She's a badass. She'll sit there and not move. you know, because he's basically saying, stay there, don't move, don't move. And this thing is freaking huge and coming at her, and she just saw it slash up Roach. She's not moving one bit. She waits, and last second, she trusts Geralt to take its ass down.
And Geralt trusts her, because normally in these kind of situations in fantasy or whatever kind of show it is, like, the caretaker won't let the little...
Get involved at all.
But he, even after doing the whole Elder Blood stuff, like, he still was like, hey, if you want to do it, go up there and do it. And it was just such a cool moment. But the one part I didn't like, even though it was a really cool line, after he does the... After he basically... does the cliff jump and kill, he's like, where the fuck are my swords? Why wouldn't you have those swords at this part, you know?
I don't know what happened. I think he, I don't know if he lost it while he was in the river, or, you know, Turnabout came down and when he got Roach picked up the swords or something. I don't know what happened, but he just has to drop the F-bomb.
I'll forgive it because it was so cool.
Yeah, it was.
I love this fatherly Geralt we get, where he's like, I'm proud of you, Ciri. What you did back there was courageous. Mm-hmm. Like, feels good to be appreciated.
Now to the temple.
we're getting there. Real quick, Ciri just has a line of, you know, I had that pull again. Like, I had a feeling that it was coming for me. I don't think it wanted to hurt me. It's like, did you see anything of Roach?
But that's also one of those things where, is it foreshadowing the fact that she's like the leader of this, these evil beings, you know, because they're saying she could destroy the world. Is it like Ciri, the good girl who you think is good, you know, but she's prophesied to be bad. And the thing is drawn to her because it's actually, she's like actually the master of all of them or something.
Yeah. She even says, you know, if the monsters are coming through the monolith and it's my fault and I feel terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, Luke, what you were about to say, I just have no idea, because this is yet again.
I was going to say that. I was going to be like, I don't even have the first guess.
We have enough information at all.
Yeah.
So she kind of goes on to that pull feeling again. She says, you know, when the Black Knight had her, Ciri, she felt fear and anger. But later in season one, I don't know if you remember this, like, men came for her in a field to collect her bounty to turn her over to Nilfgaard. And she said she didn't have fear. She was just angry. Yep. And she ended up, you know, screaming and killed them all. Geralt's like, how many did you kill? Four.
And that was
just
like
four. You got some catching up to do.
And that was like a blackout for her, right? She doesn't remember killing all of them. Yeah.
She just like remembers kind of screaming, and then I assume she just blacks out.
And that's super similar to the blackout that her mom has, Pavetta, in the scene where Dooney
the wedding ceremony.
Yeah. Yep.
The wedding feast.
Yeah.
So yes, finally we get to the Temple of Melitele, goddess of fertility and harvest. And we also get introduced to Neneca, and she is kind of the leader of everybody at the temple. We kind of learned that this is really a school to kind of learn, and even witches go here just to get the basics of magic down. This is where witches learn their signs.
Right.
So Geralt gives off his swords and he's like, hey, there's no fighting here, no politics. The temple is known for its neutrality. You're going to be all safe here. We kind of get Neneca. I mean, we see that Geralt and her have a history. They have a past relationship where they know each other very well. You know, said, hey, missed you too a lot. Geralt doesn't say that to anybody.
No. And you could tell with this kind of thing, for all the Witcher training that Geralt and the Witchers deal with, it's usually brutal, but it seems like Neneca was very good to him, you know, and it was an actual, like, a reprieve in the brutality of his training.
I was so excited to see these characters, and spoiler for the next scene, Jar, to show up.
Yar, I think they do Yar, right?
Yeah, Yar.
Like Yaskir, yeah.
It destroyed me when it said it, because I was like, I have been saying everything wrong my whole life. But both of these characters were something from the books that were like, you know, they were there, a couple chapters here and there. I just did not think we were going to get them, and they're way different than what I have in my head, and they're way cooler. Maybe not Yar, because he's pretty much what he was. But
he's simping for Ciri, dude.
Was way different. Neneke?
Neneke?
I think it's
what the fuck your name is.
I know. I pronounce it as like Nineke, like in the beginning in the books when I read it to myself. So it's
When I take notes for fantasy shows, I write the character's name once and then I put the first letter of their first name for the rest to save space. And it's always like N makes an appearance, you know?
Right.
Stuff like that.
And you're like, damn it, Pest Luke, stop being lazy. But we get Siri and Nineke in her office and they're saying, we can help the beginning process of controlling your chaos. Siri kind of drops the line like, oh, I can become a daughter of chaos. Nineke's like, hey, where'd you hear that? She heard it from one of her prophecy visions before. Nineke says, you know, the questions you're asking require knowledge that has been lost in time, lost for a reason. Like, are you sure you're ready? Siri, just being the badass she is, goes, yeah, I'm ready for the truth, whatever it takes. Mm-hmm. They actually drop a cool Geralt line of like, hey, how do you know Geralt? And Nenica's like, well, you see that giant crack in the wall? That was, we had an Ard incident where he almost destroyed the office that we're in.
And it's Ard the push.
Yep. Mm. Yeah. So it's just kind of a two-headed like line there. One saying, you know, this is cool. Geralt was a student here as well, way back when he was still learning. Also, Geralt is super strong. Mm-hmm. And like we said it a few times, when he went through the trials, he kind of was head and shoulders above the rest. And this is just showing his potential again. He almost destroyed the entire office when he was just learning how to use the art sign.
Yeah.
So he's
our boy.
He's a beast.
But if that's the end of that, I want to take the next scene just because I thought it was so freaking. Is that it? That's all you want to say?
Yeah, that's all I had.
I think it's so freaking funny when what is her name? Freya Allen, right? Who plays Siri?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When she just feels like confident and like gets in her charismatic bag, like she's just so entertaining to see. And like the first instance of it was totally what you were saying a couple episodes ago, Paul, when she makes the appearance, when Eskel, I think, walks up to her and he's like, yo, what the fuck's your deal? And she's just like funny as shit in that scene and just like confident. And she does the same shit to Yar here, just like basically embarrassing this little kid, kind of. And that's what she really does to him like all the time. She treats him like she's so much older because from an events perspective, she really is. She's like way more mature. Yeah. She's seen death, like all this stuff. So I just thought she's just so charismatic on screen, like as Siri, when she's doing shit like this, that I just, you know, like this whole scene is she gets that magic, the magic ball.
Or Boculum.
Yeah. Is that something or was that new? Cause
I don't believe it is.
Like,
maybe
do the
they
video games have items like this or no?
Yeah, they do. I don't believe they have this one specifically.
Yeah,
perhaps they do, but they do have like a bunch of different magical items. And I guess this one is in the beginning to help train Siri.
Right.
Nobody tells her what it is or what it does or what she's supposed to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
Just that she needs it to kind of train.
Right.
Luke, you totally are right. Yar is just like this nerd going around saying like, oh, or Boculum's a cool tool for you, but you know, my tool is much bigger, bigger and much more powerful.
Yeah.
And knowledge.
I knew you would love that line.
Your tool almost broke my toe.
Yeah, that, and I was going to get to that, Siri, just being, your dang tool almost broke my toe. Like, just being, like, joking, confident, she kills it.
Yeah. I mean, I even love, like, when he's taking her away, Yar, you know, she passes Geralt, and she's like, help me.
Yeah.
Yar actually has, Yare, don't know. Whatever. He has two quick lines after his knowledge line that I just want you to kind of put in your back pocket and maybe keep an eye out for. He says like, hey, did you know that neuromancers can relive past events just by looking at paintings? And did you know there's a myth about a long lost tower on the continent that used to connect? And then he gets cut off real quick because his big tool almost broke her toe. But those are two little cool lines that you should probably.
I did not remember that second one, and that second one's lit.
both of them are pretty dope. Siri's just a beast. That was my summary note from this scene.
Yeah.
We also, real quick, just have Nineke and Geralt kind of talking. Geralt says, hey, what do you think of Siri? Like, what do you think of her after talking to her? And Nineke is just like, I don't see a way that you're not fucked. I think you are completely screwed because you are in charge of looking after her. saying like thousands have been killed in the pursuit of her. Like, are you ready for this? Like, she recited Ithilien's prophecy during one of her episodes. And, you know, they bring up the Wild Hunt again, saying she's a child of destiny. And it's just like all these, like, yeah, you're fucked. There are forces at play larger than we know. You're a part of her and she's a part of you. Going to this whole destiny has more of a meaning and more power than in this world than you think it would. But finally, like you said, Yen is looking in and sees Ciri, and she hears the Deathless Mother in the back of her head say, "Find me, steal me." And we do get a fuck. Yen is walking around. She's like, "Oh, I'm just admiring the architecture," trying to act like she belongs. She opens a door and it's locked, and she goes, "Fuck." Yeah. And goes and tries another door, but it was fate, because this door was none other than our favorite Witcher, Geralt. Mm-hmm. And the door opens and Geralt's not looking, but he's like, "Oh, no, Ciri, I'll come to you later." And then he, like, his head snaps up and his eyes open wide because
he feels in his loins, man.
He smells that lilac and gooseberries, her signature smell, and just stands up and they have a cool reunion. You know, what do you guys think of this? Saying like, "Oh, like, is this real? I don't care. Just being together again. Isn't that nice?"
That's so nice, man.
I like that. Yennefer kind of assumed like, "Oh, this is your childhood surprise," and in the back of her head she's like, "Fuck." But also, I'll talk a little bit more about this as we go through the next scene too, but dude, my man Henry Cavill is so good at being like a smitten Witcher, because Jesus, man, like, he's so good at showing no emotions but being the happiest version of showing no emotions in the entire show. Like, here and the next scene when Yen's talking to Ciri, he's just like kind of looking at her. I was just like, wow, dude, this is awesome.
He's like, "This could be my family."
Yeah.
Me, man. Yen and Ciri just living the dream.
How good is Ciri coming into the room as they're smooching? Yeah. She's like, "Geralt, do you have any idea?" And then she sees, sorry.
Central.
And Paul, this is what you wanted to talk about, right? Because this is where we get our name drop of the episode here, when Geralt's describing who Yennefer is. "This is my dear friend."
she looks at him and is like, "Dear friend? Well, that's what you're going to call me?"
Yeah.
So this is a big call to the books, how Geralt and Yen get reunited is Geralt actually writes a letter from Cara Morhen to Yen saying, "Will you please come and try to train Ciri, this young girl that I'm looking after?" And it's saying that Geralt, as he's reading this letter, can tell that she wrote it just so pissed off and angry because he started his letter with "dear friend," which he thought was like a good way. He didn't know what to do because I haven't seen each other forever, so he just goes with "dear friend."
What's wrong with "dear Yen"?
Yeah, right, would have been better. So this triggered her, and in her response she goes, "Dear friend, it was so nice to hear from you, dear friend, and as you being my dear friend, of course I will do this for you," and basically just rips him apart for calling her a dear friend.
And he's probably like, "Damn, she called me friend three times. We're good."
Yeah. It was so funny, the reading. The book was actually just like, Geralt knew at the end that he was like cursing himself. And he was like, "Why the fuck did you do that?" So a lot of fans were upset that they didn't go more into this in the show. It's really hard to do that. I just like that they did have the call out of "dear friend" right in there, and actually did have it in there.
But this whole conversation basically just continues to part two, so we can keep talking about whatever we want here. So they catch up. I think they have their drinks. They're chilling in the temple, and they start talking about, I think Yennefer met a unicorn at one point, or they're just talking about the existence of unicorns.
Ciri's like, "Hey, you really expect me to believe unicorns exist?"
Yeah.
Because
that's why you have to be pure of heart for it to show up. And Geralt's like, "Well, then how the hell did you see one?"
Mm-hmm.
It's slightly different, the criteria of what they just kind of randomly drop in the books, but like for the purpose of the show, that works. Only approach those that are pure of heart, whatever. But we find out that Yennefer, she's been hiding from the Brotherhood. We actually learned that from Istrid first, right? I think she just reemphasized that, like, they're talking about that in general. And this is the part in my notes where I said, "Wow, man, like, Geralt just looks ecstatic right now, just like looking at Yennefer." And Ciri has the magical ball, and she's like, "All right, I'm gonna let you guys go because there's some sexual fucking tension here.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go figure out what this ball does."
Yeah, you guys seem like you need to catch up.
Yeah.
That unicorn line, I don't know if you saw, but when Yen replies, says, yeah, unicorns are real. I had a stuffed one until it broke. Yen and kind of looked up at Geralt, and Geralt kind of saw, made eye contact, and like turned away. Yen had a stuffed unicorn that she loved to fuck on. No idea why. They never explain it. Geralt hated it, but Yen always wanted to bang on this stuffed unicorn.
And it's in the books?
In the books.
That's
you can do it in the games too. I've done it.
Oh, really?
Yes.
It's just, that's some attention to detail by
who does it,
it's the same people that
CD Projekt
The same people that did Cyberpunk and Red Dead Redemption.
So funny. So I loved how they kind of threw that in there, and they even threw like the smirks and eye contact between Yen and Geralt in there. So
yeah, like you're saying, a real taxidermied stuffed unicorn she bangs on. Wow.
Okay. Disrespectful for that unicorn.
That doesn't seem very comfortable, man. If it was like a stuffed animal, it might be a little bit better.
Bro, she was like a freaking, like her back was broken her whole life. I'm sure she doesn't care. Her level of comfort and yours are wildly different.
Yeah, probably.
Siri had the cool line. Geralt says she's the most powerful mage she's ever known. And Yen's like, really? He would say that. That's nice. We also learn that Geralt came across one of her other dear friends, and he told me what happened to her at Eratusa. Like Luke said, she kind of confesses that she is hiding from the Brotherhood.
Right.
And she kind of uses that as a lie, because she really, her main goal isn't just hiding from the Brotherhood. It's actually to go after Ciri.
Mm-hmm.
But as Geralt brings it up, she just kind of leans into it and is like, yeah, I'm on the run. I'm a refugee. Mm-hmm. They kind of go off, and now they're like talking to the hallway. She's saying, have you ever dreamed about me? Like, or fantasized about me? And he's like, I don't know. Did you? And she's like, yeah, I did. I dreamed that you were, you know, ripped apart by a troll.
This is when she starts acting a little suspicious, right? Because they're talking about Rianne and Yasker for a second. Mm-hmm.
We do have a Nanake and Ciri conversation, which I forgot to bring up.
Yeah, when she's lighting the candles and stuff.
Me and Paul, before we recorded the last, like the beginning of last episode, we said like there was just a couple scenes throughout these two episodes that are just so useless. I literally took a note for this scene. I told Paul, I was like, I took a note for a scene where I just took nothing away from it. And he goes, oh, the one where Ciri talks to Nanake? And I was like, that's the fucking one. I took nothing away from this scene besides, I don't know, Nanake was there.
Yeah,
pretty much. That it's like a 5-minute conversation, and she's just saying, you know, lighting a candle for Roach from Mousak. Nanake has a line about, you know, with the right guidance, you might have the ability to break this cycle of hatred once and for all.
That's probably it. That's the main takeaway.
But then, to continue on, now we got Yen and Geralt talking. They kind of go along saying, you know, you hurt me. Yen is saying to Geralt, you hurt me. Which I don't like this, because in the books, Yen knows right from the get-go, as soon as Geralt made that third wish that Yen and Geralt fell in love, she knows that he made that wish. In the show, she like realizes as they're going for that dragon at Cairn.
Right.
And she gets all pissed and says, now she's saying like, you hurt me because you didn't tell me. And I'm like, they shouldn't really have that conflict because... Well, I don't know. Maybe I'm just spoiled
The books, it's like a whole thing that it's never been explicitly stated the canon wish, like the word for word wish of what Geralt's last wish was.
Mm-hmm.
So like, it's so up in the air. And that's just one of the mysteries of the series that was meant to be, is like, what did he say word for word? Like, I wish this girl's soul is just connected to mine now. Or is it like, I wish she's in love with me? So, like, no one really knows. That's kind of the point. But you know, there should be mystery around it, but you're right, Paul. Like, I don't love how like it's like a dispute between them right now.
Yeah, honestly,
they get over it pretty quickly. Like, Yennefer doesn't seem like she's going to hold it against him going forward.
Mm-hmm. It's just one rift, and there's another one coming up at the end of this episode, where I'm like, ugh, why? But anyway, they continue talking. Yen says that she ran into Yasker at Oxenfort. Oxenfurt, and there was a firefucker that was after him. Rience, she doesn't say the name Rience, she just says firefucker. But this firefucker was looking for you, Geralt. And Geralt realizes, no, he wasn't looking for me. He was looking for Ciri.
And they do show that Geralt was like, oh, is Jaskier okay? Like, who cares?
It's one of his only friends in the entire world.
Which, yes,
now I guess last
hates Geralt.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
as of right now, doesn't really hate, but
he doesn't hate him. He's just upset. Yeah,
Geralt
grudge because he loves him.
Geralt tells Yen that her heart has been racing this whole time. Like, she was like, "Hey, what's going on? Are you nervous?" And you know, this is really her kind of freaking out a little bit because she kind of has to betray Geralt by stealing Ciri away, and I think that's what she's nervous about, but she's playing it off saying, you know, some wounds refuse to heal. Before they really go off on too much of a description of what wounds it is, you know, it's not the baby, the fact that Yen can't have a baby anymore. She doesn't say what it is, but they do go to find Ciri.
Dude, turn up for the rest of this episode because, man, it's been since the end of episode. I feel like episode 3, 4, and 5 didn't have too much action when they get like with non-monsters, and like this gets back to how it was. Like, I love this whole sequence of events, and we'll talk about some specifics, but
So just to go to the Rience scene that we skipped over before, Rience is talking to Lydia at this random restaurant. He's holding the vial of Ciri's blood and the Witcher potion, but Rience isn't giving it up right away because he's saying this isn't what their deal was. Their deal was to get the girl. This is something else. So I will give this to you if you tell me who your employer is.
Put that theory hat on, Jimmy. What do you got?
I was going to ask you guys, like, are you not allowed to know, like, say anything because of the books?
Definitely not.
Not allowed.
This is something that's going to be consistent, and I feel like our knowledge is too much.
So
I'm not going to be good with a theory on this one, to be honest. I'm not asking for a real theory.
I'm just initial thoughts of just like who you think her boss is, like any names at all.
Yeah. Keep it in the back of your head.
Yeah.
But
I'll wait till I get the answer and then I'll tell you I knew it the whole time.
Yeah. 5 seconds before the reveal and you call it out. Five seconds. The classic Paul. But she says, hey, if you're going to go through with this, you're going to need a crew. So I know some particularly savage brothers.
Son of a bitch, I'm in.
Son of a bitch, right? I'm in.
So cut back to Ciri walking through the temple. She's just walking the halls, holding her orb. She finds a book on the ground. It's Ithilien's prophecy. That's just a coincidence because it was actually Yare.
The big tool.
Yeah, it was his big tool that he dropped. She sees the blood on the ground, and she sees Yari knocked out, and then she hears footsteps, and Rianne shows up with the crew of his Michelet brothers. These are cool. I like that they kept them from the books.
Me fucking too, man. I appreciated the shit out of this, because in the books, Jimmy, they get like a chapter like kind of describing how fucking ruthless this group is, and like these brothers that are gonna fuck shit up, like, you know, all this thing goes on, and basically not the same thing happens because it's not at the temple or anything. I think it's actually at Oxenfurt that this whole fight happens, but it's just it goes exactly like this. It's just they gas him up so much, and then Geralt comes in and just, you know, fucks him up.
Commence the ass whooping. And the choreography is just, let's go.
Oh, definitely. Just to jump to the books again real quick, Sapkowski does this thing where he just will start a new paragraph and it's just the perspective of somebody completely different. And he does a perspective of the Michelet brothers real quick. There's one of them. It is really cool. I liked how he does do that. Sometimes he does it a little too much for my taste, but he gives them a whole background. So it's cool that they did throw him in, like we were saying.
Dude, so good, man.
Yen walks up. You know, nice scar, shithead. Is this the firefucker? Yep.
All right, get Ciri out of here. Let's take care of this shit.
Pretty much.
But he does do that. He does do the circle of fire on Yen, right?
On Ciri.
Before they show up. Yeah.
I think it's actually Geralt that comes in and just ards them back real quick. Because, get the fire out of there.
Yen can't do shit, so.
Dude. Yeah.
But like you were saying, like the choreography, it's like as it was building, they're circling Geralt. It's like you could literally hear the bell ring from like a boxing match. Like the bell rang and then immediately that everybody just jumps into action.
These guys are fully equipped. He's got no swords, no potions, and he's whooping their ass.
Barehanded.
Dude,
just destroying them.
I love how Geralt tells Ciri, like, you're going to be fine here. Like, this is a safe palace. Like, he gives up his swords. And next thing you know, like, 20 dudes with swords and Rhiannes just show up ready to kill someone.
Yeah, that fuck where my swords line was foreshadowing. Yeah.
Without a doubt, my favorite fucking kill of this entire show. Obviously, I think you guys know where I'm going with this, but when Geralt just freaking is like fighting with the one brother, levitates him up in the air and puts the sword under it and just lets him fucking let gravity kill him. I was like out of my chair, like, let's fucking go. I almost like when Geralt fights humans more than monsters because
like it too.
He does it in such creative ways, and because he's a witcher and has magic and shit. Like at the end of episode one of season one, that still is probably top three scenes of the entire show when he fucks up all of Renfri's like crew. Mm-hmm. He's also Johnny Dogs from Peaky Blinders. Dude, it's just so good when you just see the difference between what the Witcher trials do to a human compared to other humans. Like that's the part that really like is just so insane to me. And it's just, man, I have chills right now thinking about fucking all the brothers up and Rhiannes like kind of ditches out and goes chases Yennefer and Ciri because that's the main goal, why these are the distraction. And
how cool was it when Geralt's got four dudes all around him? They slow it down a little bit as he's like mid punching one in the face. Yeah. And he's just kind of perceiving everything that's going on in the room. He sees Rhiannes in the background slowly walking to where he and Ciri ran to. And he's like, all right, let me, you know, take this guy out. I'll get that guy out of here and I'll start taking off for Rhiannes. And it's just, they do a really good job of breaking down everything that he perceives.
Mm-hmm.
That Ard kill, just sending him right up in the air, and it was so good.
And obviously the slow motion tooth coming out of the face.
Yep.
Awesome.
That's when I wrote down. I was like, that's when I realized Geralt's just in his bare hands, man. He just has his bare hands.
Doing it, man.
Up.
Yeah.
We go to Yen and Ciri and they have the door locked, but Rhiannes is trying to burn it down and get in. She's giving Ciri, you know, lesson number one. See the outcome, make it happen. The orbaculum reacts to magic that isn't Yen's,
right?
So, you know, it must be Ciri's,
and that's still like
portal.
Yen doesn't actually say word for word, like, I don't have my magic, right? It's just her saying, this is reacting and it's not my magic, so use it.
Yeah. Like, Ciri doesn't know that Yen,
right,
doesn't have her magic. Same with Geralt, I believe.
Geralt definitely doesn't know.
I just, so, again, it's sad to see, but also kind of cool in this specific instance that Rhiannes basically only uses fire magic. Like, he's just only fire, it seems like.
It's weird.
It's weird. Like, but you should be able to use anything, and you're going to emphasize that fire makes you fucked up, like, whatever. But it is cool in this specific scenario when he's, like, burning down the freaking
door and the statue.
Putting them on a time limit, and then, you know, portal freaking opens, and Ciri, I don't know, casts?
He did it.
Do we use the word cast?
I guess channels.
Cass is magicians, channels Wheel of Time.
Yep.
Yeah, she pulls up a portal.
She uses the port key.
Yeah, and
exactly.
As they're going through, you know, of course, Geralt sees one last second. He actually throws a sword at Rhiannes, but Rhiannes steps backwards into a portal to get out of there. But Geralt does have a second where he sees Yen through the door, makes eye contact, goes, Yen, stop.
Don't do it. Breaks your heart.
She goes, I wish it could. Bang, goes in. That's really all we get. We kind of see them land. And on the other side of the portal.
And this is for me and Jimmy only, because you've seen these last two. I thought, well, I guess because Ciri created the magic, I shouldn't be thinking this, but it looked like the cabin of the Deathless Mother.
It's not.
Well, thanks.
Is that a spoiler, or you're just saying it's not based on, like, are you telling us that because
you're about to get what the cabin is?
I'm sure that's first scene.
My theory is that it's going to be somewhere in Sintra, because usually, like, when that shit happens, when you're using magic, like, you, like, especially, like, think about, like, Apparition or Portkeys or whatever, like, you go where your mind takes you, and usually you think of, like, what, you know, the first thing that pops in your head, and it's usually, like, again, we're talking too much Harry Potter, probably, but it's like Hermione when she takes him to the woods in book 7, And she's like, I went here with my family. It's the first thing that popped in my head. So maybe for Siri, it's something like somewhere in her home.
In Sintra, you know, that's actually a great thought, because like you're saying, like Yennefer says, envision something, make it happen.
Right.
And I can't even think, like, because of how the show has gone so far up to this point, I don't think we really know enough spots for it to be somewhere else. Like they didn't go to the Brokilon Forest. Like that would be dumb. It's a cabin. Like they didn't go.
They didn't go back to the Witcher headquarters.
Yeah, like, I was going to say, I doubt they went to Kaer Morhen.
Yeah.
Well, I guess
that would have been a freaking smart one to do, but
yeah.
It was Jimmy. Jimmy was a pretty good guess, his first guess. Like,
Sintra, Sintra sounds right, yeah.
So one little detail, and it's pretty much the last thing you get, is as soon as they land in that cabin, they both kind of puke.
Yeah.
And you're like, what's the deal here? How they've used portals a bunch and nobody did it. I believe that it is in the books that when you are first learning, and this is a reason why Geralt doesn't exactly love him, if you don't do the portal exactly right, it can make you physically nauseous and puke.
Mm-hmm.
So this was Ciri's first time using a portal. So she ends up not knowing how to do it exactly correct, and it makes him puke. Yeah, I like that.
That's cool. I like that. Yeah.
I am hyped, though. Yeah, dude, that was such a good way to end the freaking two episodes too. Like, Geralt just in his bag. He now knows Rience is his freaking enemy. So like that's going to be set up for some good battles later, hopefully. And then we already said one of my favorite takeaways from this episode is that we're probably, I don't know what's going to specifically happen, but the whole Fringilla Kahir conversation about Emir showing up soon. Insane. Like I want that to be a thing. And like those are the two things I'm really looking forward to, is like, where the fuck are we with Yennefer and Ciri, and how's Yennefer going to treat this knowing that she kind of walked away from Geralt? And then also, like, what the fuck is going to happen with the whole Elfgard storyline?
Right. Agreed. I agree 100% with what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Geralt and Ciri is what you're most looking forward to, right?
Probably. Well, they're not a thing.
Geralt
and Ciri?
I guess they're split up there. I was always saying, you know, that's my favorite storyline.
Anytime they're together, yeah.
Yeah, but I guess they're not right now.
Yeah.
Two episodes left. Cannot wait to hear you guys' reactions after you watch them. Text me after, because I need to know immediately. But before we get out of here, we're going to do a Bang Kill Mary real quick. We haven't done too many of these for The Witcher, so we got plenty of options. We're going to go with three studs. We're going to go with Geralt, Yaskir, and Istrid.
Okay. Now, that's actually pretty good. I feel like Luke has a little bit of a thought process he's going to have to go through with Istrid versus Yaskir.
Ooh. I can start if you guys want.
We're taking it like we're in this universe.
Okay.
Yes. I'm not bringing him home to my mom, right?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
I am going to marry Geralt. And we said this before when I married Yen, when we did the BKM. I'm going to marry Geralt, and we're going to have a nice little reverse Mormon marriage. That's going to be great.
Geralt, and Yen?
Yes. It's going to be amazing. Okay.
That's going to be amazing.
I am actually, I can't believe I'm saying it, going to kill Yaskir.
Okay.
Because he must have STDs of like every kind. Back in the day, that's no protection. True. He's banging mistresses left and right. I don't want to get warts.
Well, you could be one of his mistresses, dude.
No, I'm going to be Istrid's mistress. I'm going to bang Istrid because by banging him, I feel like I'll get a little bit of an in into, you know, Aretusa, maybe, you know, some of his history and knowledge. And I'll make out just a little bit with him. I'll make out with him just enough to, you know, get some good relationship.
Some knowledge. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Taking it. Yeah.
All right.
So I'm going to actually bang Yaskir. I'll get these magical STDs. I'll explain that in 1 second. But he's definitely got the most experience of these three, right? Like, he's been around the world. If we're going to fucking do it, we're gonna roll for the fucking experience, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to get my magical STDs cured by my new husband, Istrid, the magician.
Wow.
Oh, so
I'm killing Geralt, but for the only reason...
What?
For the only reason is, okay, so Geralt and Istrid both treat Yennefer amazingly. Like, they both love her, like, whatever. Right, that shit's pretty much tied. But I need the emotions, baby. I need the freaking, like, give and take. I'm not talking to a wall right here. Plus, like I said, he's going to cure me my freaking Yasker SCDs, and he can portal. So that alone is enough for me to be like, let's get it.
We'll take
on. Sorry, Geralt. Sorry, Henry. It was Henry Cavill, though. Different story.
Maybe.
All right. So I'm taking this from Paul's point of view, where if I get Geralt, that means I get to have a little bit of a three-person relationship with Yen. And that's going to mean something to me with my answer here, because I'm going to marry Geralt. He's going to protect me for life. Okay.
Nice. Nice.
He's my protector. We're going to have our daughter, Siri, and we're going to have our wife, Yen. Okay. Now I'm
we're going to have,
Now I'm killing Istrid because Istrid loves Yenna. Okay. And if I don't kill him, he's going to have a grudge against me for marrying Yen and Geralt, you know, and it's going to be a problem. So if I kill him, then I'm not going to have to deal with an enemy for a long time. Now, Yaskier, he's going to serenade me, and he's just going to get the clothes off, man.
Best night of your life, bro. Best night of your life.
That's what he does. And if I get the STDs, I'm married to Yen. And if she gets her chaos back, I'm sure she can take care of me. And she can get rid of those. Like, she can get rid of her STDs with her magic. So marry Geralt, bang Yaskier, and kill Istrid.
So you guys had this. No, Paul, you killed Yaskier, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, tell me how good he is in a sec.
Yeah. I love that when we all have different answers.
There you go.
That is good. Can't believe you killed Geralt. That hurts me.
I knew Istrid was going to be something for you, Luke, because I know how you love those types of characters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Istrid portaling. I love those types of men, dude.
Last thing I'll say, though, because I know we're about to get out of here. I still think, like, maybe I'm biased, recency bias, but I think we're just peaking. This whole season has been, from episode one to now, feels to me so far it's been up and up. Like, I cannot wait for 7 and 8, because I said it on the last time I was on the podcast. I'm already in. Like, I think this season's better than season one. And if it ends strongly, like, I can't see how, like, if you don't care about the source material and books, like, you don't love this show. I was talking to Kyle's sister the other day. She was saying, like, this is top tier TV, like, even above Wheel of Time in her head. So it seems like the general population, so far from my experience, loves it. Like, my dad absolutely loves this season. I'm loving this season. I'm just hoping that 7 and 8 stick with the theme.
Yeah, let's get some ratings in here. We actually haven't done ratings in a while. But if you had to rate episode 6, do you want to do 5 and 6 or just 6?
It's tough because me and Jimmy didn't rate any of them yet. So it's hard to compare. And I only rated 1 and 2, which I think I gave them both 7s, just like above average. I would have rated 3 and 4, probably like 8s. And this is right around the same thing, like 8, 8.5. I really think that maybe it's the compounding of the first 6 episodes, or the first 5, but I think like 6 might be my favorite. I don't know. I it's hard to tell. It's separating when we're binging them like this, but I just think that out of the pairs that we've done them in, 5 and 6 have been my favorite.
I think I would agree with that.
I'd give it like 7.5. I give it an 8. I think Rian's introduction with that Geralt fight scene with the Michelet brothers, all really cool. We got a lot of information about kind of what Ciri is as a whole, like what her, the title of, you know, Elder Blood entails. So it was a good episode besides the Ciri lighting candle scene with Nenneke.
Yeah. And take out Ciri, the show at its core is Yennefer and Geralt. And like, we're finally back on that track. And now, I mean, not technically because they split up again, but like, at least we got a good interaction. And I'm assuming because Yennefer has Ciri that we're going to get another good Yennefer and Geralt, a couple scenes at least. Maybe not the next episode, maybe episode 8, but I want it.
Same.
All right. That's going to do it for us for today. If you guys like what you heard, our podcast also covers Wheel of Time, Dexter, Midnight Mass, Rick and Morty, all different kinds of shows, but all really good shows. If you want to toss a coin to your binge town, we have a Patreon up where you can become a binge town homie. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter and hit subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. But the easiest way to do all of that is to check us out on our website, bingetowntv.com. We are so excited to cover The Witcher, and we are so happy to have you here along with us. So from everyone at Binge Town, thank you so much for listening.
Toss a coin.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.